Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this. Why do you say doing solves?
Well, complaining and worrying, what I found years ago is I learned that it generally doesn't solve the problem, and angsting about stuff creates bigger problems. And so years ago, I adopted a philosophy of not worrying about anything in the past, learning from it, but not worrying about it. And then I really don't worry about too much in the future, because candidly, if you even said 1 year ago, both you and I are in separate places, and we're going to be on a podcast on September 12th talking about life or whatever, you could have never predicted it. So what I do is I make today awesome. When I go to bed tonight, I will have had an awesome day. And God willing, if I wake up in the morning, guess what I have?
What's that?
Some yesterday. What I had for 30 years now by doing one day at a time, making them awesome. An awesome 30 years.
I spoke with Jeff, he was at the incubator program, and he recommended a book. It was called, I think it was Be Present. And what you just explained, it was something similar to that. When you just said that, I said, oh, okay, so today matters because you are making it matter for yourself. So Dean, I appreciate you again. You mind if I go ahead and give you your introduction so that way you go ahead and get the podcast started? Okay. I wrote it down so that way it can sound good. Okay. Welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Here at Failure's Knowledge, we speak about growth, development, and becoming the best version of yourself. Today, we have a special guest, Dean Akers. He's the CEO of Adjunct. CEO Dean is not only a father of five, he's a passionate leader who helps people eliminate self-talk and position themselves to be more effective. Dean, welcome to Faye's Knowledge Podcast. I'm excited to have you.
Thank you.
So before this success, before you was able to recognize that you can be present today, who was Dean before you started learning more about that?
In what respect?
In the beginning phase, like your origin story. Who are you? Where did you come from? And what do you do?
Yeah, so I've been blessed to have things happen in my life that they were kind of out of the ordinary. In high school, I did really well. I was a stupid kid. You know, I was in all the boom, boom classes. My teachers would never fail me. Do you know why?
Why so?
They never want to see me again.
Because you were in the boom, boom class.
I know. They didn't want me to be. They didn't want to have another year with me. And it got so crazy that they actually collaborated, I think, back in the day, and I became the school store manager my junior year in high school. And they gave me three periods a day that I was just stood in the school store and sold pencils and paper and stuff, and was a school store manager. And, you know, it was a fun job. I got to meet a lot of the whole school, obviously, and it got me out of high school. And I'm not even sure I was a college person, but my grandfather, who never had a third grade education, he made a lot of money building highways, and he wouldn't even let his kids go to school, college. He thought college is stupid. Then he wanted his grandkids to go. And this is crazy. He put together a deal for all of his grandkids, 30 something, that 100% of our college was paid for, room and board, expenses, and $500 a month stipend. Yeah, I see your eyes. It was stupid. So I went to the University of Florida. Back then, you could get, I barely had enough grades to get in, but I could get in. And there was another motivation. 100% of my college was paid for, which that was a blessing on steroids. And the Vietnam War was at the height. And if you went to college, you got a student deferment before they did the lottery and the draft. So then, and back in 1970, nobody really wanted to go to Southeast Asia, I promise you. It wasn't a tourist destination you wanted to go to. So I started my career in college, and I got to do a lot of cool stuff in college. And then I got my first job, and that probably changed my life more than anything, because when I got my job, it was a sales position for a construction equipment company. And I'm sitting there as a trainee, which basically was the secretary's BITCH. They would tell us all we did was file for them and stuff. I mean, we were gophers. My boss calls me in, he goes, "Dean, Britt quit." Britt was a salesman in Ocala, Florida, 100 miles from our office in Lakeland, Florida. He was the third salesperson to quit the company because he couldn't make even $7,000 a year. And I was making $7,000 as a trainee back then. So my boss says, "Britt quit, you're going to Ocala. Our offices were 100 miles away." Britt was the third guy to quit that territory. So now I'm going to be number four on this death march. And so I went up there. Caterpillar was number one in the industry. John Deere was number two, and International was number three. Those were the three big manufacturers back then. So we weren't even a big three manufacturer or rep for a manufacturer. And those three all have offices in Ocala. So now my offices for parts and service are 100 miles away, and three people failed. And you want to know what the other big headwind was?
What's that?
This was the average customer was a 50-year-old man, that owned these construction and mining companies. Guess what he was doing when he was 20 and 18?
Sales. Was he doing sales?
No. If you do the math against 1975, they were all fighting in World War II.
Okay.
Okay, so let's make it worse for me. We were the early importers of Japanese equipment. So I'm trying to sell Japanese equipment to bomber pilots. And three people failed. And my parts and service are 100 miles away. And the three biggest competitors in the industry have parts, service, and facilities in the territory. Well, I went up there and I developed a strategy which has propelled me since then, is to build relationships and get no's, get people to not buy from me. Well, as I built my relationships and people would tell they'd never buy Jap equipment and all this other stuff, year and a half later, I made my first $100,000. And back then, single man, 100 grand. That was like a lot of money. All got started. It's crazy. I got to run the company when the recession of 82 hit. I was 27 and a half, and everybody was bitching about the economy and everything. And the premise I learned from this that I still carry today is price, competition, and the economy can never affect you. And I've never lost the bet with any CEO, any CEO. Price, competition, and the economy can never affect your business. And I've never lost a bet yet.
Why can't the price economy and the what was the last one you said? The say it again.
Price,
Price,
economy,
economy,
competition.
competition. How come that doesn't affect your business?
Well, because everybody bitches about it. Can you control the other guy's price? Can you?
You cannot.
Can you control the economy?
No, you cannot.
Can you control the other thing? I mean, you can't control competition, control the economy, and you can't control those three things. So at the end of the day, what I developed was what I call three circles. And this is the bet I never lose, Terrell. You write your sales in circle one. If you took a piece of paper out right now and write your sales in circle one, whatever it is. Write the sales you lost. These were sales in circle one. You write the sales you lost. These were people you presented to. They looked at your quote. They looked at your deal and they go, we're going to go with ABC, or we're not going to use you. We're going to use somebody else, but they bought. That's circle one. In circle three, this is where the math gets stupid and why it's never failed me, nor speaking engagements. It absolutely screws up CEOs. In circle three, you write the amount of money if you had 100% market share, which, by the way, nobody has. If you wrote the total amount of money, if every single person bought from you your product, in other words, they didn't buy from any competitors, and that's in circle three. Now you subtract. This is what shuts people up. This is how I've hyper-grown my company. You subtract circle one from circle three and put that in circle two. What's that number?
That should be the average, right?
No. It's circle three.
Circle minus, three.
There's no average. It's math.
It's math. Okay.
So in circle two, everybody goes, what's that? That's the sales you lost for one reason. You didn't lose it for price. You didn't lose it for quality of your product and all the crap everybody always says they are. You lost it for one reason, which was why?
You sold it too low.
No, you didn't even know about it. She didn't even know about. So what I did is I went out to make my first 100 grand. I went out as this guy that had three competitors selling Japanese equipment in 75. I went out to lose sales. I just wanted to be on the deal, every deal, and have the customer literally go, I'm not buying from you because you're Japanese. I don't even care why. But I wanted to be on the deal. I wanted them to let me quote and do this and tell me no. Well, as I did that, it worked. And then in the 80s recession, I got to run the company. I brought everybody together around the state. And we went to everybody and I said, let's go lose sales. Well, think about telling a sales force to lose sales. You know what else I learned?
What's that?
You're not good enough to lose them all. You're not that good. If I get you on a sale, and I always raise the prices a bunch, like I raise the prices 25%. What do you think when I bring a sales team together and I said, we're raising prices 25%, for this circle two, what do you think they say to me?
That's impossible.
Right. Then I really screwed. Terrell, this is my hobby. Yeah. Well, guess what I'm going to do with all the customers in circle two? With this new real high price.
You're going to sell it to them. You're going to get no's.
Go get no's, but I'm going to pay you 100% commission for every sale you lose. So when you lose the sale, you're going to make more money because the price is higher. So now all you got to do is go lose sales. That's what I learned by my own experience when I was a 22-year-old.
When you was a 22-year-old, you learned that?
This is what I told you. I got put in that crappy territory. I went out and I said, well, if I'm going to be screwed, I'm going to have everybody throw me out, but at least let me quote the deal and then tell me they're not going to buy from me. But at least I knew about it. I'm not going to see a new bulldozer out in the field that they bought that I didn't know about. So I went out to build relationships so they would tell me, I'll let you quote, and I quote it, and they go, we're not buying from you. But I knew the deal was going down. And when I was on the deal, my biggest customer was this big mining company, a statewide mining company. The guy wouldn't even meet me. And so I do this whole process of ticks and everything back then. The guy finally meets me and he looks at me and he goes, I just want to tell you, son, I appreciate you calling on me. I called on him for almost a year and he would never meet me. The secretaries knew me. Everybody there knew me. I wrote them birthday notes. I had a relationship with everybody. Finally meets me. And he goes, I just want to tell you, I'm never buying from you. Two reasons. I don't like you, the owner of your company, never have, never will. And I flew B-25s in World War II, and I'm never buying Japanese equipment. I'm the Japs. And I went, oh, Mr. Gregg, I just want to meet you and get to know you. I don't care about selling you anything. I just want to know why, and I knew stuff about him. And I built this relationship. Well, guess what happened?
What's that?
He became my biggest customer.
Because you built the relationship and you saw him as a person first rather than trying to sell him.
Exactly. And then it even gets better. Then I got to run the company when I was 27 and a half in that recession. He became the company's largest customer. Then this is the funnest part of the whole thing is when I was 30, I bought a local tire company in Tampa because I decided I want to have my own company. So I bought tire company. I didn't know anything about finance or anything, and I do now. And it was broke, and it was a local little tire company. And I went to tell the office in Lakeland I was leaving, you know, and now I was running it, and I had my own little tire company. I'm on Interstate 4, and my box phone back then, this was before cell phones, ring, pick it up, and it's Mr. Gregg. And I go, Dean Akers. He goes, Dean, this is Brown. That was his first name. He goes, I just heard you left Scott's company. I go, Mr. Gregg, I was going to call you today and tell you. Because he even came to my wedding. I mean, this guy loved me. And I was going to call you. He goes, what are you going to do, son? I said, well, I wanted to have my own little company. So I bought a tire company in Tampa, Florida, where I was living, in downtown Tampa, a little one-location tire company. And I'm just going to have my own little company. And he goes, ah, crap. I go, what? He goes, no, I got to buy all my damn tires from you. I cannot sell you tires. He goes, what do you mean you can't sell me tires? Now, this is the biggest mining company in Florida. He has big earth moving machines, big haul trucks, all this stuff. I said, Mr. Gregg, I don't have a location in Tampa. You're all over the state of Florida. He said, well, I'm going to call Joe. You get a hold of Joe in about an hour. I'm going to run Joe down. Joe Promadio was head of his whole statewide operations. And he says, I'm going to tell Joe to just plan on building you a facility in all our mines. And you just plan on taking care of me. You know, you got it, son. In that phone call, I became the largest earth moving tire sales company in Florida. Did he ask me my price?
Nope. He did not.
He did not. And gave me free facilities everywhere in the state of Florida. So that's how I became a statewide company immediately. And I sold Yokohama tires, Jap tires. You can't make that up.
You couldn't even predict that if you tried to.
Well, you can predict it because once you build relationships, and then intentional relationships. I wasn't just building the relationships with the guy at the gas station.
Right.
And I knew why. Now this was an extraordinary, but he made me the largest tire company in Florida. And then I retired when I was 40. And I actually had a man the other day I had lunch with, a guy asked me to meet this gentleman. And he was talking to me about adjunct CEO. He said, how'd you come up with that name? I said, I was retired at 40. After 6 weeks, my wife walked in my little office at the house and said, babe, I married you for better or worse, not for lunch. You got to get the hell out of here. So I didn't know what to do, but since I'd done two companies at under 40, people were calling. Now I'm just an old man. Nobody gives a crap anymore. But when I was young, it was a big deal. And I wasn't full of myself, but you know, people thought it was a big deal. So people started calling me for help. And I said, well, I could kind of be your adjunct CEO and come in and beat the CEO up, you know, him and or her. And back then it was mostly hims. And at the end of the day, you pay me X a month. And that's how adjunct CEO started. And out of that, I would start helping people and they would get overwhelmed. And that's how I became a highway contractor. I took over a troubled company that was in default of $100 million worth of statewide contracts. And I went and did the workout because I'd done my own workout. Remember when I was 30, because I bought that broke company, didn't know it, but I didn't tell you it was broke. So at the end of the day, that's how I became a highway contractor. And we did over $300 million in the Tampa Bay area of highway work. and built most of Harbor Island, all this crazy stuff. And then I came home one day, put my key in the door. My locks were changed. My mistress was my company. And my wife, I have five sons, my second first wife decided she didn't want to be in the relationship because I was not there for her. In fact, I wrote my first book about it, A Relationship Guide for Men. And when I dedicated it to her, in fact, I think it's right behind me. I probably have a copy. Yeah, here's a copy. "52 Wows, A Relationship Guide for Men." And the premise was, is if you have a lady and you create a wow in her life every week, she will love you till the day you die and treat you like a king, do everything. I mean, will just cherish you because you actually cherish her. And the definition of a wow is something you do for her that you don't look for an accolade. You don't do it for any, "Hey, babe, what'd you think about this?" You do it special. And I give a ton of examples. I mean, if you're driving down the road, pick those wildflowers. Go to the Dollar Tree. Get a vase for a dollar. Put those wildflowers in a vase. Put it by her nightstand and just say, "Thank you for being you." Don't tell her you put it there. Buckle your seatbelt that night. You can't keep up with her.
So the name of the book was 52 Wows Relationship Guide for Men.
Yeah. It's on
Relationship.
Amazon. I should take my fogger off the backdrop, but yeah, 52 Wows, A Relationship Guide for Men.
I'm gonna get the book. I'm gonna get the book, Ding.
It's a hoot. And the premise around the 52 means 52 weeks a year.
So every week you're doing something to wow her.
Yeah. And just without any agenda, you don't do it. It's not like, "Hey, babe, what'd you think about this?" I had one guy was going, "I don't know if that works." I said, "Follow me." We went to Walgreens, the drugstore, bought a blank card, and I carry stamps all the time. I mean, I write 50 to 100 handwritten notes a week. And we go in there, we buy a blank card, and I said, "What do you call her?" And maybe he called her babe or something. You know, you have a nickname for your spouse or significant other. And I said, "Just write, babe, thank you for being you. Love, whatever you say you are. What cutie pie or whatever she calls you. I'm going to put a stamp on it for you. You're going to hand address it and you're going to put it in the mailbox and not say a word and mail it to your house." 2 days later, the guy calls me up. He goes, "Oh my God." He got home and she had gotten home and opened the mail and got that. He couldn't keep up with her that night.
So you really have to be creative when it comes to not only business and relationship, but just in life in general.
Yeah. I'm having dinner tonight with a gentleman that I've known for years, and I wrote him a birth. I write birthday cards. I do 50. Well, you can see right here. These are getting ready to go out today. I got here early today. See how many I've already written today?
Yes.
This guy calls me up and he goes, "Man, you never forgot my birthday." And I go, "Well, that's okay." He goes, and I was between companies, so I was retired. He goes, "What do you do? Can you take 5 or 6 days with me?" And I go, "Yeah, I can do whatever." I said, "What do you want to do?" He says, "You have a passport?" And I go, "Yeah." He says, "Bring it and don't worry about it." He had a private jet. I showed up at Tampa International at the jet center where they have private jets where he keeps his jet. We get on a jet and now we fly to Houston, where we picked up two other gentlemen. And then we fly to Guatemala City. Land in Guatemala City, there's a helicopter waiting for us. We get on the helicopter, we fly out the Pacific Ocean, where we spent the next 4 days fly rod fishing on big sport fishermen for marlin. One of these guys owned an island in Roatan. So then he go to the island scuba diving. So we got back on the jet, flew to Roatan, went scuba diving at his house, and came home. Guess how much that whole trip cost me?
Nothing.
Well, yeah, it did. Back then, 30 cents for a stamp.
So, did you get that from your grandpa on how you can start building relationships, or you just really grew that habit over time?
Because I got screwed over. I got put in that territory,
When you was
and
22.
yeah, and I was screwed. So I said, if I'm gonna fail, I'm at least gonna have everybody like me enough to tell me they didn't buy from me. Like me enough so they would tell me this, so they would actually throw me out, but like me enough that they would let me quote. I had one guy in that territory. He was a former mob boss out of New York, and he owned big rock mines. I went cold called him, and he told me to get out of his trailer, at his big mine, and he had all these goons. And I go, "Well, I just wanted to," and he said, and these two goons said, "I'm not gonna say his name because blah blah blah." He told you to get out of the trailer. They physically picked me up and carried me out and down the stairs and set me on the ground and said, "You never come back. Do you understand?" I was scared. I mean, I was shaking like a leaf. I mean, I thought I was going to get shot. This is a rock mine. They could have shot me and buried me, and nobody would ever know. I ended up subtly building relationships with him, and he taught me a lot. He taught me about leadership and stuff because he taught me a really valuable lesson, actually. And at any rate, he became a big customer of mine also. And do you think price and competition and the economy affected any of my sales with him?
No, it did not. No, it did not, because you established a relationship.
You want me to share a story what he taught me that changed my life too?
Yes.
Leadership with leadership
Yes, sir.
really changed. He took me in his truck one day. He owned thoroughbred horses. He was from New York and he raised thoroughbred horses in Ocala. Horse racing horses. Why do they have thoroughbred horses? Why do they raise them?
Why do they raise them so they can train them properly?
No, they raise them to race and win money. That's all they're there for.
That's all they're there for.
Great thoroughbreds are some like friends of ours. They're one chromosome from crazy. But what you want is same like as athletes. Athletes are high performing athletes are one chromosome from crazy. I'm one chromosome from crazy. At any rate, what he showed me was, he said, "Do you know the difference between a horse farm, a regular horse farm, and a thoroughbred horse farm? Do you?"
No, I do
This,
not. He
I
said,
know
"What?"
you,
No, I
but
don't. I don't.
you're gonna laugh, or if you're been around a horse area, you're gonna laugh. So you
Okay.
take a horse farm. There's no perpendicular fences on a horse farm.
Perpendicular fishing.
Yeah, fence goes like this. There's no perpendiculars.
So how's the fence?
It's perpendicular, but they put a 10-foot radius of fence inside because the stupid ass horse is always trying to get out because they're thoroughbreds. So they run the fence line. Well, they're so stupid, they run 100 miles an hour down the fence line. And if it's perpendicular, guess what happens?
They can break it.
No, it breaks them. They run into it and it'll maim them, kill them. Whatever. They'll have to put them down. They won't ever be thoroughbred superstar horses. But because they're all the time trying to get out, that subtle curve, they just go zooming around the curve and they never know they're fenced in. And what it taught me was, is as a leader, when you build an organization where your people don't feel constrained and fenced in, or the boss says, guess what? You have a high performing business. When I go in and do turnarounds, all I do is remove perpendicular fences. And all of a sudden, I have an empowered workforce. And that's what I did with my construction company. I have 350 employees. I mean, do you think most of them are laborers? People go, "Well, they're not that smart." I go, "What are you talking about? They're smart as hell. Everybody." And then I would empower them, and they came up with the best ideas. Somebody goes, "Well, they're not smart." I said, "They've been doing it 15 years. They forgot more than all of us." They look at us. We're stupid. They go, "Yeah, the boss, he doesn't know what he's doing, but we do it because that's what he told us to do." And they will let you run your train into a brick wall if you want. So when I put the curved fences in with all my teams, They're empowered. And that's how I've hypergrown every company, where competition, price, and economy never matter.
That makes sense now. So if your team and the people that you're working around is empowered, they perform higher.
Yeah. And the other thing is, they have fun. It's not work.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Number one reason people leave a company. You know the number one reason people leave a company?
Leadership.
Yeah, their direct supervisor. But you know what? Leadership always says, I have a bet with a company right now, the CEO and the COO, and we're doing this survey I developed about 30 years ago, climate questionnaire, and they think it's money. I bet this woman, she's like, man, she's the problem, by the way. She's not the CEO, but she's the problem. And I didn't say that to her, but I'm doing the survey and she says it's money. I said, money's never in the top 5 out of 10, never, as far as what employees want. Because they're already, you're paying what they think they're worth. I mean, if they really think they're worth, they'll go do something else. Or if they want to start their own business. But most people have a number, you know, that either makes them comfortable where they pay their mortgage and all that. And if you just keep them happy, but if you keep them emotionally happy, A, you can pay them more. Why?
Because they're emotionally happy. Like they.
And what else? What are they doing when they're emotionally happy and empowered?
They're performing higher.
Yeah. You can always pay them more because the price doesn't matter. You raise the prices and keep paying them more. It doesn't matter.
You know, it's so interesting. You said that you went to University of South Florida. So I went to
University of Florida.
University of Florida. Oh, that's crazy. Okay, so it's different. Oh, I saw the picture on LinkedIn of your kids on how, like, the caption was, "You making Papa proud." I was like, wow, they're following your footsteps. That is incredible.
I have two of my sons that went to USF.
Okay.
We go in about 2 weeks. This will be their third time to win Fast 56 or whatever they have, a fastest growing companies, USF companies. And the guy speaking 2 years ago, I helped mentor him, and he's the presenter and he's successful. And he stood up there and he goes, "This is history for USF. We've never had brothers win Fast 56. And I want to call out their dad. He's in the audience today, because the reason I'm standing up here and the reason they won Fast 56 is he mentored me and his sons followed his footsteps." That was a proud moment for me.
Wow. Did you cry? Did you cry, Dean?
I actually did.
What did that mean to you, like seeing your sons up there just accomplishing what they are putting their minds to? Not only your sons, but the one that you, your mentee as well.
It excites me because I'm an outlier. I have found that most people, they're taught to go get a job, a job. And I teach young people, I probably have breakfast or lunch. As a matter of fact, after our visit today, I have a breakfast with a 24-year-old. And I teach young people to monetize their passions. And when you monetize your passion, you never work another day in your life. And all my sons, I've taught them that. And they, like my oldest son, his passion was riding roller coasters. And he got a job for Universal when they weren't hiring. And they weren't hiring any college kids because we're in a hiring freeze. But every time they tell you you're hired freeze, guess what? They're always hiring. They're hiring every day, these companies. They're just not hiring you. So he went to work for them as a parking lot attendant, you know, with the yellow vest. At age 33, he was International Amusement Park Executive of the Year worldwide. He's a senior executive for Universal now. He opened up Universal in Singapore from scratch. And his last big project was he opened up Universal in Beijing, China. And he just got back from there. And now he's in the process of opening up a Universal park in London, I think. and out in LA or something. And guess how hard he works?
Hard, I'm assuming.
He's
No,
never worked a day in his life.
because he's following his passion.
Correct. He just broke the code.
That's interesting, because when I first met you, you were speaking about passion, and then the shoes that you had on, you had all five of your sons on there, which was creative. I've never seen a pair of shoes like that. But as you were speaking, as you were talking about passion, not only was you talking about it, you can feel it. Like, I felt it. I don't know if the whole room that was there felt what you were speaking about, but it taught me that when you understand who you are and recognize who your passion is, what your passion is, and you actually do it often, you get better and you understand how you're getting better.
And you can monetize anything. That's what's crazy. You know what the biggest problem with young entrepreneurs, and guess why entrepreneurs, I always hear this stuff, small business. Do you know why businesses stay small?
Why?
Because of the leader.
Because of the leader.
Starter, the entrepreneur. There's this book, and I buy the copies. You can't see because I got you fogged out, but I probably have 20 used copies of it.
The email, is that revisit? I have that. I've been listening to it.
This is the entrepreneur dilemma. They can't get out of their own way. And then they'll bitch about the economy or my favorite, they'll go, oh, it's so competitive. I go, are you kidding me? You're doing $1 million in sales. I do the three circles. And when I do the three circles, and I do it in their market, so it's not like the globe. And I go, they'll bitch, and I go, you know, there's restaurants. There's 50 other restaurants on this street. Why does everybody not come to your restaurant? Well, these other guys, I said, no. 90% of the other people don't even know you exist. You're the problem.
You're the problem. Right now, so at the start of this year, I was attending University of South Florida, and then I went to Kaiser University, because USF, I was taking integrated public relations, but I didn't necessarily want to be in integrated public relations because I wanted to do business. And so when I went to Kaiser University, my major now is business management. And so I'm in this class. It was industrial organization psychology. And when I saw the name, I'm like, I don't fully understand what this even is. Like, I don't understand the class. I don't understand the course. Of course, when you start learning about it, start participating in it, you get the concept of it. What you're saying about leadership, my professor, my doctor, she, well, not my doctor, she's a doctor, that's my professor. She was explaining that if you learn your employees and communicate with your employees, not only will you be better, your company will be better, or the employees will be better. And then when you just say it's the leader that remains small because they're not developing themselves, that just blew my mind.
Gave all 350 employees, team members of my construction company, I gave them a financial statement, a balance sheet and income statement every month, all of them. All of them. And everybody goes, why would you give it to them? I said, you know, they go, because I want to teach them the great game of business. And I once a month, I mean, once every 3 months, I held a meeting up there. Since you went to USF, you know, there used to be a Holiday Inn right there on Fowler. And they have a big convention center there across from University Mall back in the day. Still there, I think. And I would have this breakfast on a Saturday morning. I'd have 400 people there for breakfast, and it was voluntary. You didn't have to come. It wasn't, we didn't take thing. They brought their wives, and we would go over financials. We'd go over strategy. They would empower. They came up with every idea. All I did, people go, you don't know anything about construction. I don't have to. I got 350 people have been doing it 20 years. Why do I need to know anything? I need to know how to get people out of each other's way. That's all I got to do. Teach people how to get it out of the way. I had more fun in that business. I would still be in that business if my wife had not changed the locks that day. That was my mistress. I loved it.
So I went through a divorce. I'm 25 years old. I went through a divorce when I was 23, and that's heartbreaking. Okay, that's disheartening. How did you not only overcome it, but how did you refine yourself?
Well, I had to do some self-reflection. That's why I wrote the book 52 Wives. That was part of my journey to reflect. And I dedicated it to her. And then when she read it, I gave it to her, when it got published. She said, this was her words. Exactly. Yeah. And you know what? We're dear friends today. I'm married again. I definitely subscribe to the 52 Wives now. And I've learned the art of shutting up. I mean, yeah, that's another thing. You don't need to have the last word in a discussion. Shutting up is a powerful, powerful tool. And it is in business too. So, any rate, yeah, the whole that part of my journey and the tire business was a big part of my journey. And then as adjunct CEO, I was blessed, and that's how I got in the construction business, and I loved it. And we did a ton of projects here in Tampa Bay area. And then when I went through my divorce, I sold the company, and I went retired again. And then I took about 7 or 8 years and traveled all over the world. Started dating like a wild man. In fact, you know what my definition of a long-term relationship was?
What's that?
Breakfast.
One breakfast. I was gonna say one night.
Yeah. And what was funny about it, and I was very transparent about it. In fact, I actually own interimguy.com. And I used to have a website. I took it down, but it was theinterimguy.com. And I would meet women. Well, I was in my 40s. I owned a tuxedo. I could go to events and not freak out. And so women would take, they would call me up. They go, would you be my escort to this black tie event? And these were girls I meet and know and other friends and stuff. So I would date all these women and stuff. And I just was the interim guy. And they go, where's this relationship going? I said, God put me on the planet to be the interim guy till you find Mr. Right. If anytime you want to get out of the relationship, I'm not going to stalk you, freak out, cry, but are you having a good time? They go, I love hanging out with you. I said, then don't worry about it. Enjoy the moment. Forget
Enjoy the moment.
tonight. Don't worry about it. And it worked for me. And then I met this woman 17 years ago. And she was going through a struggle with her son because she wanted to move him into a different school district. And where she lived, she couldn't get in. And I said, and I met her through a friend of mine. And I said, well, yeah, I'll put you on my electric bill and we'll go meet the principal and just you live here now. And she didn't. And I got her son into the junior high school and all that. And one thing led to another. And 17 years later, I'm still married to her. In fact, my first wife and my second wife, they all get along great. And my second wife will go, I'll give them back to you. And she goes, no, you won't.
One thing that I learned, because right now I'm in another relationship. So when me and my wife started really talking and getting to know one another, we both went through a divorce. But when we both went through the divorce, we did the work separately. And as we was doing the work separately, when we came together, it was we had so many different similarities together, where like she went through the divorce, I went through the divorce, she was finding herself, I was finding myself. It was like in alignment. And everything that she was saying, everything that I was saying, it was resonating. I'm like, this can't be real, Dean. It can't be real. But we was aligned with everything that we were saying and everything that we went through and every experience that we was going through. In fact, we met at a conference, at a conference, and we still go to conferences. So it's nothing different, but we're just in alignment with one another. Just like you said with the adjunct CEO. It's the leader. The leader is the issue. So how do you continue to work on yourself by you being the leader?
Well, I mean, I work on myself every day. I mean, I still do 5Ks. I'm 72. I try to stay physically, but I'm not a physical freak, physical exercise freak. Like I do all these 5Ks. If I was to get up, I could show you I got all these medals and stuff, you
Please.
know. Huh?
Is it easy to grab?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see him?
Can you come in just a little bit closer? It's
Let me hear
blurry.
off of the background like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I
Okay.
gotta get it.
I see him.
Anyway, this there's a G in it, but I do these 5Ks. Is and as a matter of fact, yesterday was a kind of a somber day for me because I also do triathlons. Not now at my age, but I was doing triathlons and I did the original New York City Olympic distance triathlon. August 28th, I think the date was, in 2001. And when we were up there in New York, let me see about, see if I can change the background. Any rate, we, when I did this race, and guess what happened?
What happened?
While I was up there, there and now you can see everything.
Okay. That is a lot of running, Dean. That is a lot of running. You do a lot of 5Ks?
I do 5Ks all the time, but I was doing Olympic distance triathlons, which 1 mile swim, 26 mile bike, and a 10K at the end. And people go, how do you do those? I said, because I can swim, because I was a surfer growing up, I could swim. I can always get through that. But I started to tell you this yesterday was really special, or not special in a good way, but special like in a somber way for me. August 28th in 2001, I did the New York City original triathlon. And when I did it, I was up there for the weekend, and I went to the top of the World Trade Center. And 11 days or 12 days later, was hit by the two aircraft and brought to the ground. So I was on the top of the World Trade Center, literally 12 days or whatever it was before the 9/11.
Really?
It's still a somber moment because I was up there, and then to watch it on TV when I was in Tampa when it obviously happened, and still it just still bothers me. But and I say bothers me, it's still somber to me that that happened. But anyway, I do all these stupid races, and people go, and this, you love this. People go, what was your time? When you get done, and all I ever do is this. I go, new personal best. And they all go, oh my God. They don't know that the motorcycle cop is literally revving his motor behind me, picking up the cones as I walk in from the 5K. Guess what? This medal right here is the same medal as they have. Although this is a little bit different, this actually isn't a run. This is part of engagement right here. You know what it was?
What's that?
Think like a child. My sons, I want them to do their passion. We were flying to Indianapolis with my number three son because he wanted to go do 190 miles an hour in an IndyCar because I took them when they were in high school to something that they wanted to do bad. That's how they follow their passions. So we're on the airplane. We got split up. I'm sitting next to this man. And he's sitting there, and I go, where are you going? He goes, well, we're obviously going to Indianapolis. I go, where are you from? He goes, I'm from Tennessee, Martin, Tennessee. And I go, wow, what are you going up to Indianapolis for? He goes, I'm going up there for the Nike All-American High School camp. And I go, wow. My son plays basketball for Plant High School. He's not good, but he plays for. We're going to be up there. We'll go to it, right? We'll go to it. How cool would that be? The top 50 high school seniors that are doing this Nike camp that the college coaches can watch them. They can't recruit them, they can watch them. I said, that would be cool. the 50 top studs in the US, right?
Mm-hmm.
He looks at me, he goes, "Well, you can't go." Like, what do you mean I can't go? Be an NCAA coach. When we landed, you're talking to the assistant coach of the University of Tennessee at Martin. And we sat next to Coach K, Smith, all the legends. I'm talking about legends in basketball, college basketball, on a low riser, because they were there watching these kids. They're not allowed to talk to them. So I get to hang with all these legends. And my son's a basketball player at Plant, and he's with me. And we're just hanging out with the legends of college foot basketball. You
Wow.
can't make that up.
You can't make that up.
We still did 200 miles an hour in Indy, but that was second. That was what we went for.
Right.
Can I tell you one more funny one like that?
Of
My
course.
husband, he's 20 years. He's celebrating his 10th year, but he's been 20 years in the auto parts business because he started at USF working part time and he has an auto parts company. Well, his passion was cars. So when he was in high school, I said, let's go see his, he loved custom cars. I said, where's the best custom car place? He said, it's in LA. I said, then let's go. So we get on an airplane, we fly out to LA, we rent a Sebring convertible, we go to East LA. East LA is a bad neighborhood. I mean, bad neighborhood. Cops don't even like to go to that neighborhood. I didn't know that. I'm just riding there because he tells me this is where the best in custom cars are. Well, we open the door to walk in. So I go to tell him, hey, we're here to visit you. And these two humongous men meet me. And they go, can I help you? And I go, my son says y'all the best in custom cars. So we want to come out and introduce ourselves and just see what y'all got going on. They said, they looked at me like I was batshit crazy. And they said, well, you're not coming in here. So they locked the door. I'm sitting on the park bench. There's all these bad to the bone cars out on the road that they're building and stuff and finished. And so he's looking at the cars and a yellow cab pulls up. This is why I say live in the moment and be engaging. This woman gets out, looks like she's in her 50s and really out of place. And I go, hey. And she goes, hey. And she looks at me because I'm out of place too. And she goes, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm out here to meet these guys because my son says they're the best in custom cars. And we're going to go to this show called Dubs, which are big wheels at the Staples Center this weekend. But he said they're the best. I said, let's go meet them. And she goes, where are you from? And I said, Tampa. And she goes, you flew here with your son because his passion is custom cars to meet these guys without an appointment. I go, yeah. I said, what do you do? She goes, I'm senior vice president for Hot Wheel cars, the little toy cars. And
Whoa.
what are you doing here? She goes, I'm here picking up five cars that are replicas of our little cars. And we're going to take them to the Staples Center for the Dubs show. I go, wow, that's cool. She goes, you come go with me. She takes my son and I in there. She's their largest customer. Guess where we were? No,
With her.
but guess what the facility was?
With the Hot Wheels facility?
West Coast Customs.
West
Pimp
Coast.
My.
Him, you, what?
And part of Pimp My Ride is you give them a car,
Right.
you don't even get to pick anything, you don't get to give a budget, and they pimp your car out. They'll spend $1 million on
Right.
it. We're in there while they're filming Pimp My Ride with the guys all tatted up with all the piercings and all the craziness. So we got to see the whole thing. We got to hang out with all the people building. Shaq's car was in there, his Escalade or whatever they were redoing with about a bajillion speakers, jump up, down, low ride, and all this crap. Okay, so that's cool, right? So then we had just an epic day. We got to stay all day. She was just there getting her cars and talking to them and everything else. So then we go to Will Call because she said she'd leave us a pair of tickets to this dub show. We go to Will Call and they go, oh no, Mr. Akers, you have to go down there. We walk down this little hall to VIP. And they give us these two VIP placards. We couldn't even buy food. Everything was comped. Now we go, and she wanted us to meet her. So we go in the center, Staples Center, and she's got this big display with all their little Hot Wheel cars and the big ones. And she goes, "What are you guys doing at 3:30?" I don't know what. She goes, "Be back here." I go, "What for?" She goes, "Don't worry, just be back here at 3:30." So now she takes us down this mirror to halls into a little room about the size of my office, and she says, "I'll be right back." Guess who she brought in for Dustin and I to hang with for a couple hours? Well, you would never guess.
Escalade. Was that his name?
Huh?
The guy that I think was Ice T. Was it Ice T?
You go.
I would have never guessed. I would have guessed.
Then, when the concert got ready to start that he was doing in the Staples Center, he brought us out to the front of the stage, jumped up on the stage, and said, "Welcome, my two friends from Tampa, Dean and Dustin." And then he went off to do his concert or start. Do you think my son will ever forget that?
He and his passion. Nope.
And you don't get to do cool crap by waiting. You don't get to do cool crap by assuming and not being active and getting out there. You don't get all this stuff. That's what I tell my young people. Don't be a 2-year-old. Don't accept no. 2 years, 2-year-olds do not accept no. If you come up and you go, "Mom, I want a cookie." "No, go sit down." Guess what? You think they go, "Okay, Mom," and go sit down? Does a 2-year-old do that? No. They bug the mom to win.
What?
And they get a cookie. So I teach all my young people, be a 2-year-old. Build out, and I have business models. I think I talked to you guys at UT. I have business models, and I teach people how to make a lot of money, but more importantly, how to monetize your passion. That's the key thing.
Now that you just explained it, I understand where your passion comes from. And you learned all of this when you was 22 years. 22. No, when you was a child, when your grandpa was teaching you.
Well, I learned it when I started mowing yards. I learned a
Okay.
lot of stuff. I learned it when my dad made me go to work for this here. Oh, I didn't tell you this. I didn't tell you the pre-stressed concrete. Going into my senior year in high school, my dad gets me a job with a pre-stressed concrete company that made big bridge beams, and he got me this job because he wanted me to work hard. And I already mowed yards and had a paper route, and he just wanted me to work hard so I'd go to college, he thought. Everybody went to college if you could because you didn't want to go to Vietnam. But at any rate, the first day I'm there, I get there at 6:30. It's in the summer. It's my summer job. Here a bus pulls up. Guess where the bus was from?
Where from?
Jail. Half of all the four crews were prisoners. Every day at 3:30, guess what happened?
They
They
got
got
dropped.
to jail. They didn't go out partying or anything. They went back to jail. The other half of all these crews should be in jail or were in jail. But this wasn't jail in the highest of the social circles. It was tough people. And I'm a high school kid. And so I watched something that changed my life. Every break, they would pitch pennies to the wall. And they would scream and holler and cuss, and "I kicked your ass" and everything. And it hit me as between my junior and senior year in high school, everybody loves to win. Kennedy will pull into a Circle K and buy a $1 scratch off with the only money he has on the hot hopes of winning. So what would happen is I looked at my guys and I said, "Hey, let's bet the other three crews a quarter a man that we can tire steel, pour concrete, finish it, and get it inspected before they can today. Quarter a man." They go, "Hell yes." So we just started betting amongst the three, four crews. Halfway through the summer, Mr. Young, who owned the company, and my dad, who was his best friend, that's why I got this great job, were in the backyard. And I overheard Mr. Young telling my dad, and this changed my life too. I heard that Mr. Young tell my dad, "Don, I don't know what the hell's going on at my plant. My production's up over 25% for no apparent reason." gamified it. We were having fun. At all four cruises, we had a blast. It wasn't the boss telling us, y'all need to work hard. We just had fun.
Just
And
made it
that
fun.
propelled me into, everything I've ever done in life. Make it fun, empower people, get out of their way, make them part of the team. And somebody goes, all they want is money. I go, no. I mean, no. Look at sports franchises. The guy serving Cokes at the Buccaneers, when the Bucs are winning, he feels like he's part of the team, right? Is he making $50 million a year? No. But does he have pride?
Yes.
Hell yes. Hell yes, he does. He gets invited. The Bucs invite him to a, employee thing, and he gets to hang out with some of the players. No, it's not about the money. It's about what?
Right.
Winning, being part of a team, and the enthusiasm, feeling like people care. Tom Brady's superpower, by the way. He's an awesome athlete, but I've watched him. He cares, and his people and his teams and his linemen and everybody feels his genuineness. And that's why that man's a seven-time winner. He's a superstar.
Now that you put it in that perspective, I didn't even think of that because that's my favorite player. Like when I was growing up, I played for a team called the Patriots. It was for my little league team. And then I was like, since I'm playing for the Patriots, I might as well be a Patriots fan. I didn't, for you to put it in that perspective, it was like, oh, that's why he's good. That's why he's good.
You ever watch him? I mean, I've seen him walk out to the guard gate and carry the guy a cup of coffee. Are you kidding me? That guy, I could tell you leaders after leaders that are superstar leaders. The one common denominator, they're servant leaders. They empower and put their people first, and their teams feel they feel that genuine connection. And they make it fun. They make it fun. And when you make it fun, that's why I know money's never the top five out of 10. It's always feeling appreciation and feel involvement, always a one or two when I do my surveys. And I'll tell you, another big fun story for me was I had a guy when I had my tire company. I get a call from my vice president in Orlando. He goes, Gordon quit. Well, nobody quit our company. Gordon ran one of our operations in Orlando. I said, wow, that's odd. He goes, yeah, he went to work for Goodyear for more money. I went, wow, that's really odd. Yeah, that was way outside of what normally would happen. I go, okay, well, tell him we love him. He's always welcome back. That night, this is back when we had regular telephones, my phone rang. I picked it up. You want to guess who it was? No, no. Gordon's wife. Gordon came home and told us he quit the company. And I go, yes, ma'am. And we as a family said, no, the company's too good to us and him. And we don't need more money that bad. Can he stay? I said, of course, we love Gordon. But that's not the story. I go to Orlando, I don't know, 6 months later. I go all the time, but I was up there 6 months later for Florida Tire Dealer board meeting. Because I was president of Florida Tire Dealers. And I stopped by Gordon's location and I was going to spend the night up there anyway. And we're just yucking it up. And he goes, you got time to come by the house for a beer? I go, yeah, my hotel's right around the corner. Sure. So I follow him to his house. This changed my life too to see this because I didn't know the impacts. His wife greets me at the door. They have a little block house, a little house, nice little house, a couple kids. I walk in on him and she puts me in his Barca lounger, the daddy chair. Down. And on his coffee table, you can't make this up. On his coffee table was one of my handwritten notes in a frame. That was a trophy to him and his family. I went, it does matter. It really does matter. That was a night where I went, it really does matter. All being a leader, being a servant leader, and caring about your teams, involving your teams, getting them engaged does matter. And that hit home for me.
Wow. And when you saw that, it made sense, like the value that you're bringing to others, you're not only bringing the value, you're seeing how it's helping them.
Right. Do you know how big that was for his wife to call me and at my house at night and say, the family took a vote and we want Gordon to stay with your company. Is that okay?
How big?
Well, take a guess. I mean, do you think that for a wife to call the CEO of a company that he quit, he didn't get fired. He quit to go to work for somebody for more money and call and say, we as a family took a vote and we think he needs to be with your company. We don't need more money, better. Can he stay? Well, of course I said, of course, because I loved him. Well, I loved everybody. But what brought it home to me was knowing that how I created that connection. It's just like when I had my construction company, when I had the quarterly meetings up at the Holiday Inn, these guys brought their wives. Meeting. What kind of support do you think I had when everybody wanted to be part of the team?
A whole bunch of support.
That's why I try to teach CEOs, get out of the way. Shut up.
And
Empower your people. Trust your people. Go through the finance. The number one reason most CEOs and most leaders of small companies don't give their financials to their employees?
Does it have, they're not making the money?
Don't even know how to read them themselves. I had one guy go, well, I don't want to know how much money I make. Well, when I gave mine out, I had a box at the Lightning, a box at the Bucks, an airplane. I lived on the water. I've driven Mercedes since I was, what, 20 something. And nobody thought I was broke. All my employees, they didn't sit there and go, oh, he needs to pay me more because he has an airplane. No, they didn't say that. They didn't care. What they cared about, I think, no, I don't think I know because I do the surveys. They cared about because we cared. We cared about them. We cared about their kids. We cared about their wives. We cared about the family. We cared about them, and genuinely, not. We used to have our own in-company United Way. People could donate, and we had a committee of employees. Not me. I had no say so in it. If anybody had a challenge financially, all they had to do was submit it, and those people would give them money.
So you said that the number one reason why the CEOs don't know how to read the financial report is because they don't understand it. I'm learning
Exactly.
to understand it. Is there a way where you can like guide me along that path as well?
I thought, didn't I give you the CEO physical?
No, sir.
Okay, email me or we'll send you the CEO physical, then you and I'll circle up offline. And it's about 6 pages.
Okay.
And it's got things with finance, it's got a bunch of different questions. And all you write is if you don't know, don't guess, don't look it up, just write DK. And it's not designed to fail or pass. What it does is I developed it from my own blind spot. So this isn't a book taught thing. And it helps me discover your blind spots. And then when I share with you what the meaning or the definition or the reason I asked that question, it's like a gotcha moment because nobody teaches this in school.
Understood it.
I didn't learn it in school. I learned it by being punched.
About being punched.
By already getting punched in the face.
Oh.
What did Mike Tyson say that time? You're always a superstar till you get punched in the face the first time.
That makes
Yeah,
sense.
so I developed it when I retired because people would ask me to come help them as adjunct CEO. But I didn't go in to run the companies. I went in to help them discover their blind spots and help them grow. And that's what I still do. I still do speaking engagements and stuff to help. My passion is young people in military, retirees coming out of special ops down here at MacDill. And I'm so proud of some of them. I had this one guy, he was a Navy SEAL. And I asked him, I said, what's your passion? Scuba diving. He had always done covert stuff, you know, and 30 years he's retired. I mean, he was one of those kind of guys, if he got caught, they would disavow him. He wasn't a guy like, you know, scuba diving all over the world. And I said, "What's your passion?" He goes, "Scuba diving." I go, "Then why don't you do that?" He goes, "There's no money in that, Dean." I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "We get $25, you know, at the Y and everything to teach people." And I told him to put his hand out. He put his hand out and I shook his hand. I said, "When somebody asks you to teach them scuba diving, just take their hand and say it's $250 to teach them." And then and he goes, "Well, they're not going to do it." And I said, "But you got their hand." Then you pull them to your body and you go, they go, "I can get it done for 25." You pull them towards your body. And I did this to him. And I go, and you look at him and you go, "From a guy that's done $5,000, I can't even tell you about." Or the guy that learned in a swimming pool. That's where he's making so much money, it's stupid now.
He's doing it in a swimming pool.
Well, he teaches them,
Oh,
okay?
fine.
150 bucks. But the way he's making tons of money, which this is crazy. I said, "Who are you teaching for 250? How many people that are living, that are paying $250 to learn how to scuba dive are poor people? How many?" None. None. Guess what he does now?
Teach people how to scuba
Oh, yeah. But now he goes, "Would you like to take a trip, $10,000 a person, plus you pay all your expenses, and
dive.
I'm going to take you to here, places people never could go diving?" Because he's dove all over the world, the coolest places. He knows it. So now he puts these junkets together of 10 or 15 people at 10 grand each. And they're happy to do it, to for him to take them to these exotic dive spots or crazy dive spots that you can't just go to if you're on a dive trip. And he just does five of those a year or something, and whatever, he making 5, 6, 700 grand a year doing what he loves, scuba diving.
Wow, Dean, I appreciate it. I appreciate you for your time, for your story. I know you have another meeting to go to, but I do appreciate your time. I appreciate everything that you just told me throughout this episode, throughout this conversation. So before we end, we're gonna do the quick what it's called, the quick section. So, and I'm gonna ask 4 questions. You just ask with a answer with a quick response. The first one is, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for each day God gives me, and I live one day at a time. And I'm grateful for all the things I have with my health and stuff.
Being present.
Being
Question
present.
number two, what do you regret?
I probably regret not understanding my first wife, how important it wasn't about money. It wasn't about living on the water or anything. It was about being present for her.
That I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes. Question three, what is one thing, what was your biggest accomplishment?
Five successful sons.
Yeah, I know they look up to you like you are their superhero. Whenever I have kids, I tell my wife, whenever we have kids, I want our kids to look at us like we're superheroes. So yeah. And then last question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Again, like my CO physical, I'm going to see send you. Failure is knowledge is you have challenges in your life, just don't make them repeatable challenges that you don't learn from.
That's deep. Dean, I appreciate it. So, how can people find you? How can they work with you? How can they connect with you? If they want to get more information, get your book, sign up with your program.
Yeah, just I have a website, deanakers.com. You know, and that's AKERS, or they can always reach me at dean@deanakers.com. If anybody wants to ever have a breakfast or lunch, my passion is helping people develop their passion. Like I say, I'm getting ready to leave here in 2 or 3 minutes. It's going to be perfect timing to go meet with a young man, and he's going to get a dose of what is his passion.
Dean, I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, buddy. And I appreciate what you're doing, and you've got a great journey ahead of you, and just keep on being positive. Keep on bringing people into your life that you can help expand your network of positivity, and help people eliminate the number one disease, which is my second book, self-talk. You can eliminate that. That's my passion. You asked me, my passion is eliminating the disease of self-talk. And as I do that every day, I watch people develop and be the success they can be, the success they've dreamt of, and the success in their personal life and business life. And it's now become my superpower, and my passion is eliminating the disease of self-talk.
I'm gonna get that book as well.
I got it for you, so don't you ain't need to.
Okay, I appreciate it, Dean.
Thank you, my friend. Bye bye.
Have a good one. Have a good meeting as well.
Well, bye bye. Thank you again.